Penguin Random House Audio presents The Portable Anna Julia Cooper, edited by Shirley Moody Turner and Henry Louis Gates Jr., read for you by Karen Murray, with the general introduction by Henry Louis Gates Jr., read by Dominic Hoffman, and introduction and acknowledgments read by Shirley Moody Turner. Note to listeners, this program includes a downloadable PDF which contains the chronology and suggestions for further reading from the book.
What is an African-American classic? I have long nurtured a deep and abiding affection for the Penguin classics, at least since I was an undergraduate at Yale. I used to imagine that my attraction for these books, grouped together as a set in some independent bookstores when I was a student, and perhaps even in some today, stemmed from the fact that my first-grade classmates, for some reason that I can't recall, were required to dress as penguins in our annual all-school pageant and perform a collective side-to-side motion that our misguided teacher thought she could choreograph into something meant to pass for a dance. Piedmont, West Virginia, in 1956, was a very long way from Penguin Nation, wherever that was supposed to be. But penguins we were determined to be, and we did our level best to avoid wounding each other with our orange-colored cardboard beaks while stomping out a rhythm in our matching orange-veined webbed feet. The whole scene was madness, one never to be repeated at the Davis Free School. But I never stopped loving penguins. And I have never stopped loving the very audacity of the idea of the Penguin Classics, an affordable, accessible library of the most important and compelling texts in the history of civilization. Their black and white spines and covers and uniform type giving each text a comfortable, familiar feel, as if we have encountered it or its cousins before. I think of the Penguin Classics as the very best and most compelling in human thought, an Alexandrian library in paperback, enclosed in black and white. I still gravitate to the Penguin Classics when killing time in an airport bookstore, deferring the slow torture of the security lines. Sometimes I even purchase two or three, fantasizing that I can speed-read one of the shorter titles, then make a dent in the longer one, vainly attempting to fill the holes in the liberal arts education that our degrees suggest we have over the course of a plane ride. Mark Twain once quipped that a classic is something that everybody wants to have read and nobody wants to read. And perhaps that applies to my airport purchasing habits. For my generation, these titles in the Penguin Classics form the canon of the texts that a truly well-educated person should have read, and read carefully and closely, at least once. For years I rued the absence of texts by black authors in this series, and longed to be able to make even a small contribution to the diversification of this astonishingly universal list. I watched with great pleasure as titles by African-American and African authors began to appear, some two dozen over the past several years. So when Elder Roeder approached me about editing a series of African-American classics and collections for Penguin's portable series, I eagerly accepted. Thinking about the titles appropriate for inclusion in these series led me, inevitably, to think about what, for me, constitutes a classic. And thinking about this led me, in turn, to the wealth of reflections on what defines a work of literature or philosophy, somehow speaking to the human condition beyond time and place. A work somehow endlessly compelling, generation upon generation. A work whose author we don't have to look like to identify with, to feel at one with, as we find ourselves transported through the magic of a textual time machine. A work that refracts the image of ourselves that we project onto it, regardless of our ethnicity, our gender, our time, our place. This is what centuries of scholars and writers have meant when they use the word classic. And, despite all that we know about the complex intersubjectivity of the production of meaning in the wondrous exchange between a reader and a text, it remains true that classic texts, even in the most conventional, conservative sense of the word classic, do exist. And these books will continue to be read long after the generation the text reflects and defines, the generation of readers contemporary with the text's author, is dead and gone. Classic texts speak from their authors' graves, in their names, in their voices. As Italo Calvino once remarked, a classic is a book that has never finished saying what it has to say. Faulkner put this idea in an interesting way. The aim of every artist is to arrest motion, which is life, by artificial means, and hold it fixed so that 100 years later, when a stranger looks at it, it moves again, since it is life. That, I am certain, must be the desire of every writer. But what about the reader? What makes a book a classic to a reader? Here, perhaps, Hemingway said it best. All good books are alike in that they are truer than if they had really happened. And after you are finished reading one, you will feel that all that happened to you. And afterward, it belongs to you. The good and the bad, the ecstasy, the remorse and sorrow, the people and the places, and how the weather was. I have been reading black literature since I was 15, yanked into the dark, discursive universe by an Episcopal priest at a church camp near my home in West Virginia in August 1965, during the terrifying days of the Watts riots in Los Angeles. Eventually, by fits and starts, studying the literature written by black authors became my avocation. Ultimately, it has become my vocation. And in my own way, I have tried to be an evangelist for it, to a readership larger than my own people, people who, as it were, look like these texts. Here, I am reminded of something W.S. Merwin said about the books he most loved. Perhaps a classic is a work that one imagines should be common knowledge, but more and more often isn't. I would say, of African and African-American literature, that perhaps classic works by black writers are works that one imagines should be common knowledge among the broadest possible readership, but that less and less are. As the teaching of reading to understand how words can create the worlds into which books can transport us yields to classroom instruction geared toward passing a state-authorized standardized exam. All literary texts suffer from this wrong-headed approach to teaching, mind you, but it especially affects texts by people of color and texts by women. Texts still struggling, despite enormous gains over the last 20 years, to gain a solid foothold in anthologies and syllabi. For every anthology, every syllabus, every publishing series such as the Penguin Classics constitutes a distinct canon, an implicit definition of all that is essential for a truly educated person to read. James Baldwin, who has pride of place in my personal canon of African-American authors since it was one of his books that Episcopal priest gave me to read in that dreadful summer of 1965, argued that the responsibility of a writer is to excavate the experience of the people who produced him. But surely Baldwin would have agreed with E.M. Forster that the books that we remember, the books that have truly influenced us, are those that have gone a little further down our particular path than we have yet ourselves. Excavating the known is a worthy goal of the writer as cultural archaeologist, yet, at the same time, so is unveiling the unknown, the unarticulated yet shared experience of the colorless things that make us human. Something we have always known, or thought we knew, as Calvino puts it. but without knowing that this author...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?